You're listening to ListCast. If you'd like to reach us, you can email us at listcast5@gmail.com, or you can alternatively reach us at our website, post comments, or give suggestions for top five lists at listcast.podomatic.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome to ListCast. Today we're going to do time travel movies. Top five time travel movies.
And before we start, I think it's important to note that per our conversation earlier, these movies, our selections, don't necessarily have to be, you know, the classics of the genre or anything like that. They could be serious. They could be comedies. They could be a movie not necessarily about time travel, but
it's
involve time travel or as an element in the movie.
The story is structured around.
Yeah, this is meant to be fun, and it doesn't have to be some weighty, heavy thing. So
yeah, basically.
Yeah, I just feel like we need to throw that out there.
Preface this. Yeah. Well, I'm Josh.
I'm Justin, and I think I'm going first
Justin's
today.
Going first today. All right, start us off.
All right, my number five is 1989's comedy, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure.
Duh.
I'm a sucker for time travel.
Yeah, we didn't preface that at the beginning either. This is Justin's Achilles heel genre.
Good or bad, if it comes across, you know, my channel surfing, I will stop and check it out. So anyway, yeah, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. It is an excellent film. This is directed by a man named Stephen Herrick, who also directed Mr. Holland's Opus.
And, you're shitting me, really?
Yes, and Three Musketeers, among other things.
You mean the one with Charlie Sheen? And
yeah, which is actually not a bad movie.
That's pretty good.
Of course, this is
Keanu. Do it all for love and all for one.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Alex Winter.
Come, D'Artagnan, we're saving the king.
And George Carlin. I'm not even...
Well, you don't, you know, you just don't vibe with my whatever.
Anyway, like you said, it is an excellent film. Mm-hmm. Of course, time travel is the, you know, the crux of the movie. It's what it's all about.
Unorthodox time travel.
Yeah, you know...
You know, who would have thought? You know, like, okay, we're going to have a time travel movie and they're going to travel in a phone booth.
They're going to travel in a phone booth.
Yeah.
It's going to be this, you know, goofy kind of teen comedy thing.
Teen comedy.
I'm sure prior to this,
yeah,
there were comedic time travel movies. I mean, obviously, Back to the Future had comedic elements in it, but I wouldn't label it as a comedy. This one really just took the fun, silly route and had a great time with it.
Yeah, but you think, like, how would they have sold that? Pitching that to executives at whatever company this was. You know, it's like, okay, we got two, you know,
virtually unknown
dunderheads,
yeah,
you know, characters, you know,
right?
they travel through time in a phone booth, and they, you know, like, who's gonna
and
buy that?
In the future, these two morons will be the saviors of the yeah. world through their music.
Exactly.
I'm telling you, this place is great, but it almost wasn't. You see, 700 years ago, the two great ones ran into a few problems. So now I have to travel back in time to help them out. If I should fail to keep these two on the correct path, the basis of our society will be in danger. Don't worry, it'll all make sense. I'm a professional.
I'm Bill S. Preston, Esquire,
and I'm Ted. Oh, great.
Bill, here, you take it.
Okay.
And I'm Ted Theodore Logan.
Yeah!
Wild Stallions!
But you know, I think this movie is all, I don't want to say it's terribly smart, but I think it's smarter than it at first appears. I'm not saying this is like some deep philosophical thing here.
You don't think so?
No, Socrates. but I think it's a good movie. And I think it holds up because it's pretty well written. The characters...
All we are is
dust in the wind, dude. I think the personas that they come across, Joan of Arc, Sigmund Freud, Abraham Lincoln, obviously these are caricatures and...
Not only, you know, is it kind of a smarter movie in disguise, but it educational, too. I thought it was. It shows you historical figures in their context.
Sure. And, you know, you get the briefest feel for who and what they are.
I mean, it was I saw this when I was very young, so it was the first time I was introduced to Socrates and Joan of Arc.
Sure.
I never heard of these people before.
I may have heard of them, but I certainly didn't have any clue.
Well, I was much younger when I saw it, so I hadn't read that far in history yet. Mm-hmm. So I had no idea. So that was the first time I was introduced to them.
Now, of course, we meet, I believe it's Henry VIII. You know, execute them.
I am the Earl of Preston.
And I am the Duke of Tet. It's hard to talk about without...
Quoting it
like crazy.
It's difficult.
The performances are absolutely endearing. Bill and Ted are morons. There's no getting around that.
But they're lovable.
But they are absolutely lovable and completely harmless. They may represent kind of that stoner look and vibe and all that. Obviously, that element is not introduced. They're just big kids. George Carlin is great in his role as Rufus.
Well, you know what? It also does something else. It's also about that youthful... experience of ambition versus doing.
Or skill.
Yeah, they have so much ambition. They're like, you know...
We're going to be the biggest rock
band
Yeah,
we can't
ever.
Be a super band until we get Eddie Van Halen on
but
the top.
But we can't get Eddie Van Halen until we have a Triumph video.
It's like, you know, we have to do all these things. We have to achieve all
and
these things.
And we have to have it right
and
now.
And wouldn't it be so great? Yeah. But they don't know how to do it.
Yeah.
Or they don't have the skill to do it. They don't have the patience to learn how to play guitar.
Sure.
They have guitars. They don't know how to play them.
Yeah.
And it's all about that ambition versus doing, about taking the time to learn how to do these things properly.
Yeah, but I actually like that at the end, Rufus speaks directly to the audience and says, you know what, they're going to learn.
No, he says, they do get better. That's the last line of the movie.
You know, they weren't given some magic pill to do it, you know. I think it's a, not misunderstood, but underrated movie. And... in the pantheon of time travel, this is something you're going to run across. Every movie involving time travel has to decide their own rules. The rules of time travel in that particular movie or universe. And this one goes along with the idea that what happened has always happened. To the point to where they actually say, hey, when this is over, I'm going to go do this. And then the keys are already there. That sort of thing. Everything that has happened will happen. That sort of thing. It's an interesting... way to go about that. They make fun of it and they play with it.
Yeah.
But it's just a fun little thing for people who are into time travel movies who know that there's always rules. Marty McFly in Back to the Future, he can change the past. Bill and Ted cannot. Apparently, the past was always there. They were there. They went there in the past. It's already happened.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he already did steal his keys.
I like that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, right. I like that. That's kind of neat. Mm-hmm. That's a hard thing to do because... if you do it wrong, there's no surprises. They do it in this fun comedic way where we experience the goofiness of quantum time travel, you know, through these dunces that decide, let's have a trash can fall from in the middle of the police station and fall on top of the guy. And, you know,
yeah.
It's totally ridiculous, but hilarious. So, anyway, let's hear your number 5. I am truly fascinated to hear what you come up with because I know time travel is not your thing.
You sprung this list on me. So I didn't have a lot of time to come up with a very definitive list. So I'm going to fuck you over and pick a completely shitty movie that you probably have not seen, starring a guy that you and I both do not like.
Surprise me.
I don't even know if I should say it.
You're telling me it's a time travel movie, and I have not seen it.
Time travel is involved.
Oh, just tell me. What is it?
Black.
Stop. What you're going to do right now
okay.
is, do you have an alternate?
I'm going to say it anyway.
Stop. Do you have any alternate?
Black Knight.
Don't say it.
Black Knight.
Why would you do this?
Knight with a K, as in knight in shining armor.
Yeah, I get. Are you taking this list seriously? Yeah. I don't think you're taking this seriously.
I am admitting up front, this movie is crap. This
then
movie sucks.
Do your best to defend this. Come on.
I'm not defending it and saying that it's good.
Give me some reason why we're even wasting our life clocks talking about
okay.
this.
Life clocks. Life clock's already expired. Black Knight stars Martin Lawrence. I can't stand Martin Lawrence almost as much as I cannot stand Will Smith. They get under my skin. And he is very annoying in this movie. But for some reason, I kind of like it. I don't know why. It's retarded. It's sorry. It's one of its few saving graces is an actor called Tom Wilkinson. Do you know who he is?
Yeah, he's Carmine Falcone in Batman Begins, right?
Yeah. Very good actor. Very good actor.
Yes, he is.
Very good. He acts well in this movie with not much. Okay. Now, that was saving grace number one. Saving grace number two... Fuck you. I don't care if you shake your head at me. Saving grace number two is a scene that takes place in the middle of the movie. This is one of my favorite movie moments.
Does he die here?
No. He does not die. He's the hero. He can't die. I haven't even described the plot of this film.
But don't bother.
He has time traveled back to medieval times, and he's a black guy in medieval times. He has to entertain the king, and the threat is if he doesn't entertain him, he will be, you know, tortured or killed in some way. And he has to entertain them by showing them the... They think he's from Florence, because he said, I'm from Florence and Normandy, because, you know, he's black, you know, right? So, Florence, they're like, oh, Florence, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I guess.
Show us some Normandy dancing, you know? So he, you know, he's like, okay, let's, here's some music. I'm going to give it to you. Nothing too fancy, because, you know, these are white folks, you know, because I don't want to scare them, you know?
All we need is a drama for people who only need a beat. Now give me some drumming. Now someone add me some guitar to make it easy to move your feet.
Okay.
You're holding on by a thread here, man. A thread.
He busts into this dance sequence singing, and he gets them all to start singing, and they start singing together. That is saving grace number two. I don't think there's a saving grace number three to this. Did I mention Tom Wilkinson? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know why. It's a guilty pleasure, but it does involve time travel. If you haven't seen this movie, turn off your brain and watch it. It is kind of funny. It has some humorous moments. Have you even seen this movie?
No.
Then what the fuck is it? What are you judging me for?
What am I... It's Martin Lawrence.
I know who it is.
Come on, man. Come on.
I admitted this up front. What do you want from me?
I expected better from you. I'm very disappointed.
I wanted to do something that
At
was
At least
gonna,
it's your number five.
I wanted to do something that was going to piss you off. That's why I picked
Well,
Black
you've
Knight.
Achieved your
I
goal.
Have alternates. I have more legitimate choices, but I wanted to do something that was a bit out of the ordinary. And it's something that I kind of like, even though it is a bad movie.
All right.
I'm not going to back down. I still enjoy it. I don't care, even if you think I'm being fucking retarded right now. I don't care.
All right, let's just go ahead to number four here.
Black Knight rules! No, it really doesn't.
All right.
It's a crap movie.
My number four is something I really kind of expect to see on your list further down. I'm suspicious.
Uh-huh.
Peggy Sue Got Married.
I fucking hate you.
Was I right?
That was going to be my number one.
You know, I had a feeling you were going to use this. I'm sorry. 1986, directed by Francis
Ford. This is why I'm pulling out movies like The Black Knight.
Kathleen Turner, Nicolas Cage, among other people. Jim Carrey actually makes... one of his first screen appearances in this. It's an extremely unusual time travel movie. It doesn't involve a time machine. It doesn't involve getting zapped by lightning or anything like that.
No.
It's more about wish fulfillment than
it's
anything
else. It's the road not taken.
Peggy Sue is at her 10th, maybe even 20th high school reunion. I really don't recall which.
It's up there.
She's looking at the life she's created for herself. She sees a daughter who, it seems fine, but her marriage is in shambles. Her marriage to Nicolas Cage, who's her high school sweetheart, is Peggy. Peggy. he's a washed
up. Your song's not that bad, but I replaced all your yas with oohs. I love you, ooh, ooh, ooh.
Peggy Sue, wait a minute. Listen, I cut shop, and I did some work on your song. You know it's not half bad for your first try. Of course, I changed all the yas to oohs, but listen to this. She loves you, ooh, ooh, ooh. You love me, ooh, ooh, ooh. Oh, I'm
blue. I gotta go.
About your birthday.
That's not a great Nick Cage.
That was a great Nick Cage
role. Like, that's before he got too serious.
Yeah.
Like, this is back in his, like, Raising Arizona days. When he
was
still
be back
funny.
When he was really having fun.
Yeah.
Before he got nominated for an Oscar.
Like Tom Hanks, like, before he got all serious. Now he doesn't do comedic stuff anymore.
Yeah, I know. That's
you
know,
you don't seem to like movies like The Burbs anymore.
Or Turner and Hooch.
Turner and Hooch, yeah.
Hooch!
I always preferred Canine.
No, but... I agree, definitely.
Yeah.
She passes out. And wakes up as her, you know, 16, 17-year-old self.
Yeah.
And with full knowledge of the future of herself and all of that. And proceeds to try and write what she views as the wrong choices in her life. Mm-hmm. This is another example of the movie deciding what the rules of time travel are for this movie. Essentially, nothing changes. She does things differently in her, you know, quote-unquote dream than what really happened to her in real life, let's say. And when she wakes up, even though she made those changes, nothing has actually changed. What has changed, of course, is her mentality, her thinking. Her husband is still the same guy. She tried to do things for him in the past.
Yeah.
You know, alter his past to make him successful and things like that.
Well, yeah, he was a musician.
He's a musician. She tried to give him a Beatles song.
Yeah, right.
Obviously, none of it worked.
Well, it hurts because, you know, he keeps trying to be with her, and she's like, no, you don't want to be with me.
Yeah.
You can't be together. Here's some songs. Go be successful.
Yeah.
And
she doesn't dislike him. No. She just doesn't like what her life has been with him.
Yeah.
Or is not satisfied with it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a nice, you know, fairy tale adventure. What would you change if you could?
Yeah. Not only that, but it's very universal. Everybody looks back on that time in their life when they're 17, 18 years old and they're making decisions that are going to affect their adult life.
Yeah.
And they think, man, I wish I just would have done this differently.
Yeah.
Or gone down this path instead of that path.
Right.
Great time travel movie.
Well,
because it's used as a backdrop. It's not the main focus of the story.
Right, yeah. And, you know, again, man, I'm sorry I took your number one. I had a feeling you were going to do this one. But I didn't think it'd be your number one. I was...
Because it's so unorthodox. That's why I chose that as my number one.
So I guess we're on to your four.
My number four is very silly, but I know you like it, so you're not going to hate me for it. Just Visiting.
Okay. Starring Jean Reno, Christina Applegate.
Jean Reno, Christina Applegate, and Christian Clavier.
Hmm.
Let me get my French on. It was directed by Jean-Marie Poirier.
Now that I did not know. I didn't know it was directed by a Frenchman.
Yeah, I don't know, but it was a remake of a movie called Les Visiteurs.
That I did know.
I don't know if it was directed by the same guy, but it also starred Jean Reno and Christian
Clavier. I'll bet you money it was the same director.
I'm guessing it was.
That kind of seems fitting.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
It's a goofy, funny movie that it takes no intelligence to watch. It's lighthearted, it's fun, that uses time travel as an element, and... I watched this recently. I had a great time watching it. It's just funny and goofy.
It's a fish out of water story.
Yeah, kind of like Crocodile Dundee.
Exactly. Except it just uses the device of time travel to put
like,
them...
Like he was a fish out of the water. Australia. They were fish out of time.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's not a tense movie, so there's not a lot I can say about it.
Mm-hmm.
It's just them running into all these modern day conventions. Like, Christina Applegate and her fiancé put them in a car. And at first he's like... My squire will run behind the car. He is not good enough to ride with us. He's like, oh, no, he can't possibly run 75 miles an hour. He's like, I'm wearing very good boots. You know, he's like, you know, they get in the car and they start driving and they're going like 10 miles an hour. And they're like, oh, too fast. You're driving too fast. They're getting car sick, you know, because they're not used to it, you know, or like, you know, they're eating in a restaurant and he doesn't allow his squire to sit with him, so he's sitting, you know, he's like throwing him food by the fireplace. He's like, he's not worthy of our company, you know. Or when he's Christian Cavalier is going to the bathroom and he sees the toilet, the urinal, he's like, yeah. Oh, a fountain, ooh, and he sees the urinal cake, he's like, ooh, what is this? Smells like the forest.
You know, doesn't just, he eat it?
Yeah, he starts eating it. He's like, would you like to taste the forest?
Yeah, he starts eating like mints.
Yeah, he thinks they're mints, you know. It's just goofy.
Oh, it is beautiful. The water comes out by itself. It is a magic fountain. Look at this! It smells like the forest. All the forest is in the small wheel. Smell it!
No, thank you.
Don't want to smell it.
Enjoy yourself.
Doesn't Jean Reno have a duel with a taxi cab or something?
Yeah, they run into a car.
Yeah.
They think it's, you know, like a dragon or something like that. And they you know, he starts slashing him with his sword and what. It's just completely goofy.
Yeah. You know? But, you know, it's got heart. It's got heart in that.
Yeah, it does.
He's bringing his noble attitudes, mm-hmm. his honor-based belief system to a world that doesn't really have it.
Yeah.
You know, and he tends to win people over with that because it's not bullshit for him. Yeah. It's genuine. It's very heartwarming because you feel for him. You feel that he's genuinely a good guy and trying to do well. And so as the audience, you're caught up in that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the draw of the movie. If he had been some other kind of character, it might not have the same appeal. But he's so darn likable.
Yeah, well, he has his character spills over onto Christina Applegate.
Yeah.
His, you know...
It's not on my list. I hope it's not on yours. It's actually not unlike Kate and Leopold
mm-hmm.
in that sense, where Leopold is, again, you know, just thrust forward in time. But, and in his own time, Leopold would probably be looked upon as kind of an asshole. You know, very uptight, snooty, you know, person. Sure. But he has a belief system and a code of conduct that no matter where he is,
sure,
he's going to continue that. So when he finds himself, much like I believe Jean Reno does, in a bar setting with people acting very slovenly and all that, he cannot help but correct these people who, as far as he's concerned, are just acting like pigs.
Yeah.
But and in both cases, it's done in a way that doesn't make the main character come off as like pompous. It makes him come off as, damn, I do want to be like that. You know, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite lines from the movie with Christian Cavalier when he's, Christina Applegate's taking them home and the phone starts ringing and he picks it up and he's like, you know, someone else is on the line with another person on the other line and he's hearing them talk. He doesn't know what a phone is. He's like, hello. He's like, and the girl on the other line is like, who is this? He's like, I am Andre the Petit. I have big balls and my ass breathes fire.
don't they have kind of an altercation with the TV? Can't they? They can't figure that out.
Yeah, they think there's like little people trapped inside and they start stabbing it with their sword.
We will save you. We will get you out of there.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, that's again, it's comedy. But that's kind of the endearing part, because they're trying to do something good. They don't understand it, but they're trying.
Yeah.
You know, and that's very cool. I like that. All right. My number three. The Final Countdown. Did you use it?
Yes.
All right, forget I said it. My original number three.
I have alternates, but let's talk about The Final Countdown.
All right, The Final Countdown. Damn. It's a good time travel movie.
Hell yeah.
It is phenomenal. Made in 1980, directed by Don Taylor. Don Taylor, who was a television show director, had started branching out into film directing.
Okay.
If you know that, if you watch The Final Countdown closely, something about the way it's shot and edited, it almost feels like a long TV episode. Not in a bad way or anything, but there's something about it. It's something, if you're aware of it, you can kind of see it. But nevertheless,
I never really.
It's not nothing distracting. It's hard to explain. It's an aesthetic thing. The USS Nimitz in this story is a aircraft carrier, through means that are not terribly explained at all, is out at sea, gets caught in some time vortex, we'll call it, and gets sucked back to 1941.
Well, they never call it
They don't really call it
They never call it anything. It's just a storm at sea to them.
Yeah, it's a storm. It is a storm they've never seen before. Mm-hmm. It looks almost like a black hole,
Black hole at sea, kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they are...
Yeah, one of the smarter things about that is that they never explain what it is.
Yeah, that's cool.
They never go into the engineering dynamics about what this thing is.
Yeah, you know,
it does not
the
explain
sun was
itself.
Emitting this frequency and it bounced off of this.
You don't know if it's a sentient form of whatever or if it's a natural phenomenon. You don't know.
Mm-hmm.
You just don't know. And the fact that it involves an aircraft carrier at sea... Usually when you think time travel movie, you think of a guy in a machine.
Right.
You know, with a little lever.
Intentionally trying to go back in time.
Exactly.
Yeah, these guys are just on a fluke. Absolutely no reason to think that this is going to happen to them. Get pulled back to 1941, just shy of the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
They, of course, are fully aware of the history. The CAG on board the ship is... coincidentally writing a book on
Pearl Harbor
naturally.
He's an expert on it.
He's an expert, and there is also a civilian observer that just happened to be on the ship, played by Martin Sheen. And
Martin Sheen? That's President Kennedy, you
idiots. Martin Sheen? But they get caught up in one of the classic time travel
paradox/dilemmas. Yeah.
Do we change the past?
Mm-hmm.
Do we change an event that is so impactful? Because if we do, it could alter history.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe we needed this thing to happen, that sort of thing.
Every man on this ship knows that we have radar and visual contact with the Japanese fleet approaching Pearl Harbor on December the 6th, 1941. Now, what do we do about it?
Skipper, what we do about it is blow them out of the water.
The USS Nimitz declares war on the Japanese Empire? That's what we've been doing. But they haven't attacked Pearl Harbor yet. The only evidence we have that they intend to is in the history books.
It opens up some amazing possibilities. Think of the firepower of the USS Nimitz back in 1941.
What kind of possibilities, Mr. Lasky?
Possibilities for the future, Mr. Owens. Think of the history of the next 40 years.
I have a suspicion history will be a little more difficult to beat than you imagine, Mr. Lasky.
I'm talking about the classic paradox of time. Imagine, for example, I go back in time to meet my own grandfather. Long before he got married, before he had children. And we have an argument and I kill him. Now, if that happens, how am I ever going to be born? And if I can never be born, how can I go back in history and meet my very own grandfather?
I'm not half the theorist you are, Mr. Lasky, but I still have a gut instinct that things only happen once. And if they have happened, then there's nothing we can do to change them. Nor should we try.
How are you going to avoid it? It's already happening and we're already involved.
So they're sitting there with a modern day, you know, at the time, modern day aircraft carrier with supersonic jets, that sort of thing. And they know when the Japanese fleet is coming.
Yeah, they know they have the means to...
They have the means to completely decimate the Japanese fleet and prevent Pearl Harbor from happening and pretty much take over, you know, if they decide to make their presence known and do it. Mm-hmm. And that's the dilemma on board the ship. It's, like I said, it's the great question. What do you do if you could go back in time and kill Hitler? You know, that sort of thing.
Go back and save JFK.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Do you do it? And it's just a fun, great philosophical dilemma. You know, played out with great bits of action, you know, some great characterizations, that sort of thing. Just one of the top five, my opinion, one of the top five time travel movies ever.
I think it's an excellent film, but unfortunately, not many people have heard of it.
Yeah, that's strange. I don't know how they don't.
I don't know why. I thought it was very clever. That storytelling.
I agree. I think it's quite clever. So, anyway.
What is this? My number three? I'll do another unorthodox time travel story. The Lake House.
That's an interesting choice.
Well, you know, I have alternates, but...
No, don't even... That's
no, I have alternates that I like better as a film than The Lake House.
But I agree, it's an interesting...
But The Lake House, I felt, was a very interesting way to tell a love story about two people falling in love with each other using the device of time travel through a mailbox.
Which,
I thought
probably what killed the movie, because people were like,
"Well, no, well, you know, I didn't have any trouble understanding it."
That's you and me.
I don't think a lot of people did either. I just thought that was a very interesting way to tell.
I can tell you definitively, sitting and watching this movie with a certain someone you know, and having that person go, "What?" Enjoying the love story aspect.
Well, but you know,
completely
what?
Baffled by, like, wait, does that mean that he lived in the, and it caused much confusion?
I think you're being a little...
I'm telling you that's what this person said. Okay, and was genuinely confused.
I think you're being a little too judgmental of people's IQs, but I think that some people going into this movie, not knowing anything about it, would be really thrown off about that time travel element and not get into the movie.
Right.
I thought that, you know, it wouldn't live up to it. They would be too sugary or... But it was actually very well done, considering.
Considering.
You know, it's not a great film, but as a, you know, a movie, a love story using time travel as a backdrop, I thought, wow, that's kind of an interesting way to do it. You know, they meet sending letters through this mailbox, and first they don't know what's going on. They don't know that they're living, I think it's like 5 years apart.
Yeah, something like that.
I mean, who would come up with that idea? It's just a very interesting idea.
Yeah.
And it could have ended up really bad.
Tell me about the future. What's it like in the year 2006?
I'm afraid the world's pretty much the same. Of course, we all dress in shiny metal jumpsuits and drive flying cars, and no one talks anymore because we can read each other's minds. But the truth is, man, from the past... Not much has really changed in 2006.
And a lot of people hate on Keanu Reeves. I don't mind him so much. I like him all right.
He's a minimalist actor.
Well, you know, I thought he did all right.
Yeah, he did okay.
Yeah, and it fights against that those time travel rules. Like, you know, what are the rules of time travel? There's a scene when he plants a tree or something like that, and you see, and like Sandra Bullock sees a tree grow in front of her or something. Like that. It's just, you know, like, what are the rules of travel? She looks at the tree and notices it for the first time, when you're like, right, thinking like, well, she would have been aware of that tree already.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's like playing with the rules of time travel.
And then it utterly defies those rules.
Yeah, it kind of...
By the ending.
Yeah, it kind of steps on itself in terms of following the rules. Like, any movie about time travel can set up its own rules. But
you have to stick to it.
Yeah, it has to follow those rules. And this movie... bends those rules a little bit. It doesn't quite follow them.
No, it doesn't. And no. That's sad.
But as a movie using time travel, I thought it was really unique. And it could have ended up very badly. But I thought, considering what the story was...
Mm-hmm. I like, in particular, the scene where Sandra Bullock is dating that one guy. And they go to that Christmas dinner party thing.
Right, yeah.
And Keanu Reeves happened to be there. And they shared this kiss.
Yeah.
And she does not have any idea.
She doesn't remember it.
Yeah. She doesn't remember it at all. But for him, of course, it just happened.
Yeah, exactly.
And it...
He's living in the past. She's living in the present.
Right.
So...
Well, her present, yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, she's talking him back in time. And she would have already experienced this kiss.
Yeah.
She doesn't remember it. And then he says, "Don't you know we met at this party and we kissed?" She's like, "I don't remember this."
Yeah, yeah. That was kind of cool. Yeah. And he knew exactly what he was doing. Yeah. But the Sandra Bullock in that moment in time didn't know him from a hole in the wall. And he was just kind of, I don't want to say he was taking advantage of the situation, but he was very curious and he wanted to test those waters.
Yeah.
And it was interesting. It's one of those, it's one of those things about time travel that are interesting to me, you know, where someone has knowledge that someone else doesn't, that sort of thing. But like you said, it steps on its own feet. Keanu Reeves dies at the beginning of the movie, but yet that act is reversed by the end of it.
Well, we don't know that he dies.
That was him.
Yeah, I know it was him, but we don't know, seeing it for the first time, that he dies.
No, we don't know that was him at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah, only later on do we know that...
Any astute observer of film knows that that's
Keanu Reeves. I mean, yeah, you don't see Keanu Reeves.
No, you don't see it.
No. Yeah,
but you become accustomed to the jacket that he wears, that sort of thing. And
I've admitted that.
But then they undo that act.
Yeah, I've admitted that. The movie steps on itself.
Yeah.
Sure.
And I have a you know, problem with that, because I do like time travel movies to stick to the rules they establish.
Yeah.
But I agree, the device of communicating through this mailbox that can somehow...
Yeah, only because the movie was intelligent in some way. Unlike, you know, this isn't a time travel movie, but a movie has to stay within its rules in order for it to work. But if it strays from it, like the Lake House does a little bit, it has to remain intelligent.
Yeah.
A movie like Twilight, right, which is very popular, right, involving vampires, does not follow the rules of vampirism, or whatever you want to call it.
I haven't seen it, but it can make up its own
rules. It's a horrible movie. It strays from the rules of being a vampire.
Whose rules? They get to make up their own rules.
The conventions of being a vampire. You cannot go out in daylight. Okay?
Look, I'm not trying to defend Twilight, but...
And for some reason, when you're a vampire, you glow like diamonds.
Okay, whatever.
What the hell is that?
If that's the rules they make, as long as they stick to it, that's fine.
Oh, whatever. Anyway,
I'm not defending it, man, but who says they can't make up their own rules about what vampires can and can't do?
Well, you know, time travel rules are a little bit more flexible than that.
I haven't met any real vampires, so I'm
just saying that the rules of being a vampire are pretty much set in stone.
I'll grant you that there is a certain cultural understanding of what vampires
I'm just saying is, if you stray from that a little bit, at least try to, you know, be intelligent, be smart.
Right.
Create good dialogue, good situations.
Right.
If Twilight had done that, it would have been I would have forgave it for not following the rules that I knew of, but it didn't. So even though when I'm watching The Lake House and it's breaking its own rules, I don't mind as much, because the movie is still intriguing me. It's still interesting.
Right. I mean, despite that blatant breaking of their own rules, I still enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it was trying to be something a little different. Mm-hmm. A love story with a twist.
With a twist. That's good. That's a good way of putting it.
All right. So that was your three. Yeah. So we're on to my... What are you going to do for your one and two? So, okay.
I don't know, man.
I
honestly thought you... I thought you'd go with more conventional time travel movies.
Well, here's one of them.
Okay.
Escape from Planet of the Apes. Circa 1971, directed also by Don Taylor, who directed The Final Countdown. Interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I am a fan...
That's the third...
This is the third one.
Okay.
I am a fan of the Planet of the Apes film series. There is no escape.
Isn't that the... I'd like some more of this grape juice... Plus.
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, what happens in this movie is, prior to the events that end the second Planet of the Apes, three apes, chimpanzees, Cornelius, Zira, and Dr. Milo, have taken the spaceship that Charlton Heston had and just happened to be orbiting the very future planet Earth when Charlton Heston and the gang of human mutants blow up the planet. And that nuclear act sends these three apes and their ship back into time to 1971, where they are promptly met by the U.S. government. And when they remove their helmets and, the humans, the military is expecting to see Colonel Taylor and his associates. When it's revealed that they are apes, they are taken to a facility. They choose not to talk for a little while until they can kind of figure out what's going on, because they weren't intending to time travel.
Where do you come from, Cornelius?
I'm not sure.
Dr. Milo was sure.
Oh. Dr. Milo was a genius well in advance of his time. When the spacecraft first landed on our seaboard, it was Dr. Milo who salvaged it. He studied it and... half understood it.
Half? Was half enough?
It was enough for us to escape when war became inevitable. Enough for Dr. Milo to be murdered in your zoo. Enough for my wife and I to be here now.
From where, Cornelius?
I told you. I'm not sure.
Maybe the female knows.
Of course the female knows. We came from your future.
Doesn't make any sense.
it's the only thing that does.
I have nothing against the Apes films. I think they have a very kitschy appeal. Mm-hmm. But you chose this above Peggy Sue and Final Countdown and Bill and Ted?
Final Countdown was an alternate. Like I said, I was saving that because I was afraid you used it. But when I thought you didn't, I had to slip it in somewhere. Sorry.
But you put this as your number two. But could you really honestly call this a really good movie?
I don't want to call this a guilty pleasure because I think it's a decent movie. But there's something about it. It's, you know what? I am not going to defend Escape from Planet of the Apes as my number three when Black Knight
This is your number two.
As my number two when Black Knight is even on your list, okay? Okay. This is a good movie. It's not great. Peggy Sue Got Married, I guess you could say, is a better movie. But I thoroughly enjoy this movie. It sticks essentially to its rules. There's two movies that preceded it, and because that movie the first one kind of sort of involved time travel. I want to say more like cryostasis. It wasn't really time travel, but you know, characters that are not in their time, mm-hmm. you know, through scientific means, let's say. I just enjoy it. I have a soft spot for time travel movies, and I have a soft spot for Planet of the Apes. And you put them together, and you've just got my attention.
Apparently.
But I think it's a decent movie. It sticks to its rules.
Yeah. And no, I mean, I don't have a problem with that. I mean,
Much like Final Countdown, they have the dilemma. If we know this is the future, do we or can we change it?
Yeah. I mean, in the saga of the Planet of the Apes... Yeah. You know, there's so many of them.
There's only five.
Well, you know, it feels like a lot. You know,
And the TV show.
Escape is, you know, one that's easier to watch compared to the other ones.
Right.
You know, compared to, like, Conquest of or Battle for...
Unfortunately, it's horribly dated.
It is, yeah. But, yeah. Didn't even cross my mind.
I didn't imagine it would.
In terms of time travel movies. No, it didn't. But I'm still really surprised that you put that movie at number two.
I have a real affection for it. Yeah.
All right.
So we're down to year two? Now you have to do some thinking. I took your one and two.
I don't even know what I'm going to do now.
So you're in trouble. Do you have alternates?
I have alternates, but none are at the caliber of Final Countdown or Peggy Sue.
Well, whatever you use for one and two, it's with the understanding that I robbed you of your one and two, and these are not necessarily one and two materials.
All right.
What's your number two?
Millennium.
That's a good one. I really wish I had thought of that.
It's not a good movie.
The movie's not great.
That's why I hesitated in mentioning it.
But the idea of what they do use exactly. their time travel for
the
is
concept
awesome.
Behind this movie is very
explain,
interesting.
Explain the, briefly okay. the plot.
Okay. It starts off, Kris Kristofferson is an air crash investigator, right? Uh-huh. The movie starts off with a plane crash. He's investigating a plane crash, and it looks very odd. There's a lot of
inconsistencies.
And a reporter comes up to him. He thinks it's a reporter, but he's not. And he says, were there any inconsistencies in this crash? He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, anything involving time. And he's, you know, very taken aback because there has been, like, watches are going backwards right. or something like that. He's like, I don't know.
Have you found anything yeah. that doesn't belong?
Yeah. He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, playing it off like he doesn't know.
Right.
You take people off planes just before they crash.
We replace what we take with dead bodies.
But the relatives identify them.
They identify the wrong people. We duplicate them. Fingerprints, dental records. We're very good at what we do.
Then you are from the future.
About 1,000 years.
They're listening to the black box, and one of the crew members says something like, they're dead. They're all dead.
They're burned up. Yeah.
And it's odd.
And this
like,
is prior to the crash.
This is prior to the crash, and they're listening to this, like, what does he mean they're dead? They're burned up. How could that have happened?
Right.
There's an air of mystery to the story, like, what's going on?
Yeah, that they're thinking maybe a fire flooded the cabin. No one really knows.
Yeah, yeah, and you're like, how mysterious. Is time travel going to come into this movie?
I'm right.
Like, as it turns out, 1,000 years in the future, this is where the name Millennium comes into place, humanity is dying. The society, humanity can no longer
procreate,
like children of men. They can't procreate anymore. So they go back in time and take the people who would have died in plane crashes off the plane and replace them with dead people. Dummies. Yeah, dummies, whatever. Take those people into their present so that they can repopulate or, you know, whatever.
Right.
As a time travel movie? Who would have thought of that idea? That's just weird.
I think it's awesome.
It's weird, but it's awesome, but intriguing.
Based on a book or something, isn't it?
Yeah, I wrote it down.
Or a short story?
I wrote it down. It was based on a novel by John Varley.
Okay.
Never heard of it. But intriguing idea. Unfortunately, the movie, not that good. It's just, it's okay. I saw it a lot when I was a kid. I know you did, too.
I like Kris Kristofferson. I do.
Yeah.
Louise? If it did not star Kris Kristofferson, and if the depiction of the future wasn't so butt-ass ugly,
sure,
and unpleasant to look at,
yeah,
I think this movie would have done a lot better. Because its mechanics of time travel hold up.
Yeah.
In the structure of the movie.
Yeah, I saw this movie recently, within the past couple months. The movie was holding my interest. It's like earlier today we were talking about Event Horizon,
yeah,
about it holding our interest until they get to the Event Horizon, you know, which is probably like the first third of the movie.
Right.
This movie is kind of the same. First third of the movie,
when it's more of a mystery.
It's a mystery, but you know there's something weird going on because Cheryl Ladd has come back in time.
Yeah.
He's seen her. You've seen her twice. You see her as a...
A steward or a coffee girl.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah. And then you see her come through this portal. There's an air of mystery going on. You don't know what's going on.
Yeah. See,
and then when you're introduced to the future, you know, it starts to fall apart.
Because that future is genuinely uninteresting.
It's not only that, but it's just the way they try to tell the story.
Yeah.
And then it kind of goes into Kris Kristofferson's character and the relationship between Cheryl Ladd and Kris Kristofferson.
Which is awesome. I love that stuff because it uses the conventions of time travel in a really interesting way. I agree. What pulls it down is that future.
It's not just the future, but it's, like I said, the concept of pulling people off of planes and whatnot, very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It's the movie is kind of hampered down by its 80s kind of
that does not help
aesthetic
it. Yeah.
And they lose a bit of momentum when they start really focusing on Kris Kristofferson and
Louise.
Another interesting time travel element: Kris Kristofferson is introduced as a young kid.
Yeah, he's actually met her before when he was like
Louise
10 or something.
Saves him as a kid, and she doesn't even know it, and neither does he.
Yeah.
He's
and
on
then,
a, yeah,
and then it's
on
got
a,
this whole sub thing of Daniel J. Travanti's character.
See, this movie sounds awesome describing it.
It actually is.
But it is
but
not.
You just have to kind of look past some of the stuff.
Yeah.
He's obsessed with this, and he's clued in, so he knows something's going on.
Yeah.
And he's just trying to figure it out. And it kind of blows up in his face, all but literally. And it had so much potential. And it almost made it. If only, you know, a director or a writer with just a little bit more
flesh it out,
you know, sense of cohesion could have kind of put it all together a little better.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, had a slight... I am not at all a fan of movies where they depict the future as being as ugly looking as it was. I think you can have a used future without being so disgusting.
I don't mind them depicting the future as being this wasteland.
Yeah.
That aesthetic never bothered me.
Always bugs me.
Apparently it bugged you. It didn't bug me that much. It's just the way they tried to tell that story. I felt that they could have told it better. And they didn't, unfortunately.
It's a shame because it's got some really cool ideas. So.
Well, definitely.
All right. I'm really shocked you don't have this. I'm virtually certain you've seen it. I know you've
This is
seen
your number one.
This
so
is my number one.
I don't know what you're getting at.
Time After Time.
Okay.
Time After Time.
I didn't even think about it.
How could you not? Directed by Nicholas Meyer.
Oh, I'm surprised you didn't say something like the original Time Machine or something.
I wanted to go there, but I was afraid you were going to take it, so I didn't bother. Because I know time...
Well, I just thought that Time Machine, like Back to the Future, would have been way too obvious.
That's what, exactly. That's why I didn't
So I didn't
there.
Even bother
I
with
didn't
it.
Even go there. Way too obvious. Time After Time, directed by Nicholas Meyer, who directed, of course, Star Trek 2 and Star Trek 6. Released in 1979, starring Malcolm McDowell. It's the story of H.G. Wells, who is, of course, the real-life author of the novel, The Time Machine.
Yeah, and War of the Worlds.
And he has built an actual time machine. And mind you, this is not supposed to be a character. This is supposed to be the actual H.G. Wells author. He shoots himself forward from the 1800s London, 1900s London, and goes forward to 1979. One of his friends in Victorian London happens to be, I forget what his actual name in the movie is.
Oh my god, I want to watch this movie right now. I haven't seen this movie in years.
One of his friends is actually, in that time, Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
No one knows that.
That's David Warner.
David Warner.
Yeah.
No one knows. I don't think he knows it. Or maybe he's suspicious that he's a little off. But David Warner ends up going back in time also. I'm really forgetting how that happens.
Okay.
But ultimately, the two of them are now put in San Francisco in 1979. H.G. Wells is, of course, a fish out of water. And he's very smart, very intellectual, but not particularly streetwise. And he has to kind of find his way around. He ends up coming across Mary Steenburgen. They become friends, he and Mary Steenburgen. She kind of takes to him in a, obviously not entirely, in a mothery way. She realizes he kind of needs a little help. So she stays with him, helping him out. She starts to fall completely for him, and he for her as well. Meanwhile, they're still looking for Jack, who's out there causing mischief. You know, there's all sorts of machinations throughout the movie. But ultimately, they get Jack. They return him to his own time to finish out his life. And it's been a little while since I've seen this, but I do believe it ends with her getting in the time machine with him and going back to his time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's been so long.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a few things about the movie. One of the things is near the end when Wells is trying to convince the police captain.
Right.
He's like, send a policeman over to this address, please. You have to believe me. They think he's completely nuts.
Of course.
You know,
because he tells him he's H.G. Wells.
He says my name is Sherlock Holmes. Because he doesn't know who Sherlock Holmes is. So he's like, my name is Holmes, Sherlock Holmes.
Well, no. He's aware of that book from his time, but he thinks no one's going to know
who this is. Yeah. And he's trying to convince him because he knows that Jack the Ripper is coming from Mary Steenburgen. She's like, oh, please send somebody this address. And please, Captain.
Send a
like,
patrolman.
Yeah. He's like, oh, you're off your nut. Whatever.
Yeah.
And eventually, like 10 hours later, he's like, all right, fine. You're boring me. And then eventually he does. They go there and they find body parts strewn all over the place.
Yeah. What makes you say that this Dr. Stevenson? Stevenson is responsible for the death of these two girls.
I just know for a fact that he is.
I see. Do you have spiritual powers?
Do I what?
Have spiritual powers. Are you a medium or a mystic?
I make no claim to supernatural gifts of any sort. If I could reveal the source of my information... As a matter of fact, I'm also a detective. I sent here from London on the trail of John Leslie Stevenson. Traveling incognito, of course. My name, My name is Sherlock Holmes.
Sherlock Holmes, I see. Go on.
Well, I can't go on. I've given you a complete description. I've told you the man's name. I've told you everything that I know.
Well, it was certainly very good of you to come in and share your insight with us, Mr. Holmes. Now, where can we reach you in case we want to speak with you again?
And then the captain is like, oh, dude, I'm so fucking sorry. I should have listened to you. And it was just what I thought was graphic back then.
Yeah.
Seeing body parts. I was like, oh my God. And like you see like a patrolman throw up or something like that. I'm like, oh man. But you watch it now, it's pretty tame.
Right,
you know,
sure.
Not much really to it. Interesting choice for number one. I would not have thought of that.
I think it's an excellent movie.
Well, considering it had been a while since you've seen it, it surprised me.
Yeah, unfortunately, I wish I, you know, had remembered some of those specific details. But I loved the idea that it used H.G. Wells, author of The Time Machine, to be the character of a time travel movie.
That was an interesting touch.
How fun is that? And then, of course, you know, any time travel movie is going to be a fish out of water story in some sense.
Sure.
The love story between he and Mary Steenburgen is very sweet.
Yeah.
He is a very curt and respectful man of his time.
Yeah.
And when he finds himself alone with her, she's extremely attracted to him. and she's expecting a man to come over and just do what he wants. And they're literally sitting on opposite ends of the couch. And he's sitting there, you know, just
very... Yeah, he follows the rules of being a gentleman.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And she looks to him and she goes, "Herbert, if you don't come over here and kiss me, I'm going to scream." I have been in love with Mary Steenburgen ever since I saw this movie. She is absolutely adorable and is to this day. There's something about her that just gets me. So anyway, I know unfortunately I robbed you of your choice number one, but...
You robbed me of two choices.
I know. So.
Well, I had to go with an alternate for my number two, and I... Honestly, none of my other alternates are number one caliber. I really don't know what to do.
I realize that, so just throw it out.
The Philadelphia Experiment.
Oh, damn, that's a good one.
It's not a good movie.
It is a good movie.
It's not.
I think it's a good movie.
Have you seen this recently?
Yes.
It's kind of bad.
Not really. I think it's good.
Yeah. This movie is based on, I guess you would call it a conspiracy theory, almost. A story that's been told throughout the years about this battleship, I think it was.
Aircraft carrier.
It was a battleship.
Maybe it was a battleship.
Yeah. It was the Eldridge.
Okay.
About this ship that was trying for invisibility. They wanted to make it invisible to the naked eye, not just to radar, but to naked eye. And it had an unexpected side effect of traveling through time.
How did it happen?
We don't know exactly. But somehow the electromagnetic fields created in two experiments, one in 1943 and the other now, cross-connected. They created a vortex, a hole in the space-time continuum, and you fell through it.
What the hell are you talking about?
In 1943, when the Eldridge came back, the hole closed behind it. This time it stayed open. It's like a gigantic vacuum sucking everything into it. Now, we can't stop it. But I believe that you can.
How?
Don't listen to him, David.
The source of energy explosion in the vortex is the generators on the Eldridge. You have to go back and shut them down, David.
I'm not doing anything for you.
I'm afraid you've no alternative. You see, in a very real sense, you've already done it. You see, when I interviewed the survivors of the Eldridge, they told me that you were the one who shut down the generators.
But I didn't.
Not yet. But we know that eventually you will.
This is a story that's been told throughout the years.
Right.
They extrapolated that and made a film about it. And I find the actual story of it more interesting than the actual film.
Mm-hmm.
I guess because conspiracy theories are entertaining to me. But the film in itself, the actual idea behind it is kind of intriguing. A battleship, invisibility, time travel, it's kind of weird. Well, maybe I need to check it out again.
Because I felt
that... Maybe, I don't know, when I saw it again, when I was much older, I just didn't get into it.
I thought I was thoroughly caught up in it.
Really?
Yeah. I thought it was pretty well made.
Maybe I was just too wrapped up in its, you know, 80s aesthetic to really get into it. Maybe that's what it was.
I thought Michael Pare's performance was very good.
Okay.
You know, he's got a macho
guy
quality.
Did you even think about this movie? Is it a time travel movie?
No.
You seem really surprised when I brought it up.
Yeah, if I had thought about it, I would have put it on my list. But no, I totally even didn't think about it.
Well, that's just a movie that to me seemed like you would because...
It just slipped my mind.
Well, you know, we saw it a lot when we were young and, you know...
Yes.
Yeah. It's one of those kind of oddball movies that we appreciate that nobody's ever heard of.
Yeah.
You know? Kind of a thing.
It's also one of those forgottens. But it's very good. You should really check it out again.
All right.
Well, this buttons up our extremely long episode on time travel, top five time travel movies.
Well, yeah, you warned me beforehand it would be long.
I hope in the process of editing this down, we're able to shave a little bit off of this. If not, I hope you enjoyed the time we took from your life, and I hope you found it somewhat interesting. This is Justin. Good night.
It's Josh. Take it easy.